You're listening to Intellectual Erection,
a place where we talk about the naughty.
To stimulate your thinking.
You're listening
to
Intellectual Erection.
Intellectual Erection.
Передачу, где мы говорим о диспуте, там субъекты секса.
Hablamos de los sex.
В компаниях, но мы говорим о
информации.
To stimulate your thinking.
Welcome back to Intellectual Erection. I'm your host, Patrick, and today I'm speaking with CEO of Pleasure Peaks, a sex and cannabis company, Antoinette Gomez.
And I was like, I don't know how to explain it, but like my pussy is like super high right now.
We talk about Antoinette's experience helping humans with vulva enhance their pleasures and decrease their inhibitions, also focusing specifically on humans that have experienced trauma or chronic pain or endometriosis, and how cannabis can be a product to help accentuate pleasure and decrease inhibitions and pain. Antoinette discusses her experiences in the sex-positive communities as well, and a bunch of the products that she makes and sells, along with her podcast and classes where she teaches on sex and cannabis. Before we get to the episode, I will remind you that I'm continuing to offer my platform to BIPOC voices. So if you are interested or know somebody who's interested, please reach out to me at intellectualerection@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. And as always, listen, subscribe, review, and most of all, enjoy. I'm sitting here today with
Antoinette Gomez.
Hi, Antoinette.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Now, why don't you tell the listeners what it is that you do?
Thanks so much for having me. I would love to do that. I am the CEO and founder of Pleasure Peaks, a cannabis-based sexual health company. We have been focusing on cannabis sexual health products for basically anybody to have an optimal sex life regardless of the boundaries that you're currently dealing with. More so in the feminine hygiene or people with vulvas per se, in terms of endometriosis, menstrual pain, or rape survivors. But I'm glad to be here today.
Woo, that's heavy. Thank you for being here. Now, where are you based out of?
We're based in Toronto.
Awesome. So local mm-hmm. products here. This is good. So you say that your cannabis products are at an intersection with sexual health. Can you talk a little bit about that and exactly what kind of products you have, what type of sexual health concerns they can address?
Yeah, for sure. How did I go about creating a cannabis sexual health line? I know many of your listeners will be like, how did you even think of that? Well, my background is actually in holistic nutrition. And when I was working with multiple clinics and, you know, being an intern and working with chronic pain patients, I actually noticed that there are a lot of people self-prescribing cannabis to deal with their chronic pain ailments. And when it came to sexual health, there's a lot of chronic pain, sexual health related issues as well that could come up. And what I was finding that was so cool is that it was actually incredibly effective for majority of the women that were sharing their experiences with me. And these are things, like I mentioned, like sexual anxiety or sexual pain during intercourse. And we was really shocked that all of these women were telling me that they were smoking pot before sex and having way better experiences. And I thought that was very cool, but I wanted to get deeper into it. And that basically got me into this, you know, downward spiral and realizing how sexual health has so much opportunities, but there is very little products on the market today for people. And that creates huge issues for people to have an optimal sex life and understand the full scope of their sexuality. And that's why I created Pleasure Peaks. So it's a safe space for people to test out different cannabis and learn from other cannabis enthusiasts on how they use cannabis within the bedroom and talk about how to have amazing orgasms and pleasurable sex and, you know, intimate and conscious relationships, even if you're dealing with very serious topics like I've mentioned before. So it's an incredibly important mission. We also created the Pleasure Talks podcast so we can share more stories of women. thing about cannabis is we can't really create clinical claims, unfortunately. Like, we can say that cannabis is good for sleep, but we can't say it's good for insomnia. So creating the Pleasure Talks podcast is a great loophole so a woman can tell their own story so it can help other women as well.
Amazing. So I guess we have a few things to talk about here. The podcast, the products that you make and sell, and the spaces that you host people to have these conversations.
Most definitely.
But before we get into all that, there's a question that I ask everybody that comes on this podcast, and you can choose to opt in or out of this question. The question that I ask everybody is what I call the origin question. And because this is a sex positive podcast, what I like to know is the first time in your childhood that you encountered sex or sexuality in the world. I'm always curious about what that experience is like for a lot of people. Maybe something you saw in the media. I don't know. There's always a plethora of very interesting stories. And you can choose to opt out of this question if you like.
Yeah, I think that's such a great question. And it makes me really think back, you know. But it's very interesting. I think that one of my first sexual experiences, me being a woman and me being a young Black woman, I feel that very early on, I was hypersexualized, even as a child, right? Saying things like, she's so developed, or she's so beautiful, and like, she's so young, right? So I think those kind of comments made me really think about my body and my sexuality a lot younger than most people have, for sure. I don't really like to think of those kind of aspects, but another first childhood aspect in terms of sex that I can think of is I can remember my first crush, which is really funny. And I haven't thought of it, but I love that you asked me. And I remember being so young. I swear I was in like maybe even kindergarten or like grade, I don't know, something like one, two, or three or something very, very, very young. And I remember having a crush on this kid named Massimo. I can't believe I remember his name. And I had the biggest crush on him. And I remember wanting to like thinking of like having sex with him because I liked him, but not knowing what sex was. I just wanted to like give him a big hug. I just wanted to hold him. And I think that's such a funny and cute memory that I haven't thought of in a while.
That is cute. You're making me think about all the kindergarten crushes that I had.
Right.
There is something that you said in there, which oddly is something that Tatiana King, who I interviewed recently, also said in relation to Black femininity and this notion of being considered developed at a young age. She had a very similar experience. So now I'm noticing a little bit of a pattern. And I don't know if this is a pattern outside of just the two of you, or if this is a common thing for Black women to experience that growing up.
I think it's a very common thing because I can definitely vouch for family members that are also can identify as female. And I don't really understand how it came about, but I definitely know that it is very prevalent for people of color. And that also includes like Latinos as well, because I'm half Jamaican and I'm half Peruvian. And I can see it on both sides of the spectrum, to be honest, of being hypersexualized in both ethnicities. I don't know what it comes from, but I believe that it's something that we should consciously try to change and let children enjoy their childhoods and not think of. I remember being so young, and I think like my whole life growing up, like since I was like 6 years old to like 16, and seeing my grandparents every weekend, they'd always be like, "You're so pretty. Do you have a boyfriend?" You know, like, "Where's your boyfriend?" I'm like, "No, I don't have a boyfriend, but I'm six," you know? Yeah. So it's just, they could be very playful, but I think that they could also be harmful in the way that our thought process goes later on. So I think it's very important that we're very critical on what we put onto our children at such young ages.
Absolutely. And that's good of you to bring these things up. I think Tatiana echoed some of the same sentiments of this being a typical thing that happens to young Black women being hypersexualized, and also related back to, you know, a history of this being done to Black women and also Black men in many ways with Black fetishism.
I would agree so, for sure.
So then the second part of this origin question is how you got involved with the sex positive communities. And this is a broad spectrum of anything from kink, BDSM, polyamory, sex work to, in your case, maybe a little bit of sex education and sexual health at the intersections with cannabis.
I think I've always been incredibly sexually curious in a multitude of different ways at a very young age. I think that ever since I was young, maybe going in through high school, trying to really figure out my sexuality was super important. Like figuring out like, am I gay? Am I straight? How does anybody really know? Right? And kind of just always wanting to figure it out. And I think that I'm still kind of on that journey. I still find myself being very sexually curious. I am definitely bisexual. I was actually even thinking of even making that even more broad into being pansexual simply because I am attractive to males and females, but also sometimes I have been attractive to trans people as well. So I'm very interested and I'm very sex positive, but I think the reason why I became so sex positive in the terms of like kink, daddy, daughter, submissive dominance was not until after I got engaged. And this is a great story. I got engaged when I was 21. I got engaged when I was so young and I absolutely loved this guy. I was obsessed with him. I wanted to marry him for so long. I think we were together for like 8 years. So basically out of high school, I knew this guy and we, you know, got engaged. But as soon as I put that ring on my finger, I was so scared. I was so scared shitless. I was so scared. I was like, how can I even be with a person if I don't even know truly what I want sexually? And that scared me. I was like, is this going to be my sex life for the rest of my life? Like I was really scared. And not that our sex wasn't great. It was good, but I knew I needed more. And that was so hard for me to share with my partner, to share with him that like I wanted to explore different things. But what was amazing is that he was incredibly supportive about it. And we actually decided to try everything. We tried like polyamory. And honestly, us trying polyamory opened my eyes into what pleasure could look like and getting rid of the ideas of what pleasure could look like as well. Just, you know, just being with my body and my pleasure with whatever I'm feeling that day. And I feel like that has been the most empowering thing for me in my life, to just understand that my sex life is whatever I want it to be. And that's all it is. Right. So I absolutely love that. It really made me understand why I like being a submissive person in bed and why I really need that dominant person as a partner, and also understanding conscious relationships and healthy relationships in that aspect and having a multiple partners.
Awesome. So you've experienced a little bit of kink, bondage, BDSM, DS relationships, and traversed into polyamory. Are you still currently with that same human that you engaged at 21?
I'm not. We actually decided to end things about a year ago, and we've both been happy and healthy, and we're still really good friends. So I'm really happy and fortunate about that.
Okay, so you transitioned the relationship to a friendship.
Yeah, I think having those hard conversations about our sexuality and, you know, what monogamy looks like, or what really a marriage looks like for us, maybe not the traditional marriage, but a marriage that would work for us, it was pretty different. And we both still love each other more than anything. And we really just want both of us to be happy.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
And when it comes to your business, when did you start this business?
2015, pre-legalizations. I was way ahead of the game.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So you had it for a while then.
I've been doing it for so long.
So tell me about the development of this. What was the first thing you did when you started the business? Was it product oriented, or was it more the podcast or the spaces to talk about pleasure and cannabis?
The beginning of this business was definitely developing product, was working with so many women that were telling me like, I haven't had sex with my partner in 3 to 6 years. I haven't had, you know, pleasurable sex. I have sex with my partner, but it's incredibly painful, or, you know, rape survivors not getting through in their trauma and healing, and women with endometriosis getting, you know, the door closed from doctors. And it was just so many different sexual health ailments, but they were finding relief through smoking cannabis. But I knew that there had to be a better way, because we did, as a compassion model chronic pain clinic, we were creating cannabis creams and oils and flowers for people. But I knew that if something could be better, if we could create a product that was safe, you know, that could be applied directly to the vulva or the genitals, that's really what we're going for. So that really made me super interested in product making. And once I was able to like work really closely with these women, it was very intimate. And as soon as they started using it for the first 3 months, they just kept coming back being like, oh my God, I can't believe like I actually had an orgasm. You know, like, oh my God, like I'm actually not in pain when I wake up anymore. We're like, oh my God, like he actually like really loved, you know, being in there all night or whatever it was. So people were having optimal sex again. And that's incredibly important, because if you're not having an optimal sex life, you're not having an optimal life, period, because it's just a part of your health like anything else. So it was really empowering for a lot of these women, but it definitely started out in the product making and just really being there for them.
Okay. So I'm familiar with some of the cannabis products available for, you know, sexual purposes. I have been given a sample of THC infused lube and CBD infused lube from another company. I think they're also in Toronto, Highly Intimate. So those are the two kinds of products that I'm familiar with. You also mentioned some oils and creams and things like that. What types of products do you make today?
So we make a bunch of different products, but what I like to show people is that cannabis can be used in a multiple, like so many different ways. And what it really comes down to is like, what are you needing in your sexual health aspect? Because it could be mental, it could be physical, it could be a diagnosis, you know, it could just be like needing a prescription. But in terms of products, we have, you know, sublingual sprays that are really good for relieving sexual anxiety, like on, like a fast onset between like 10 to 15 seconds, you'll feel that relief from it. We also have lubricants are so incredibly important. But I like to say that lubricants are more of like a marinade. They're great for women because if you can put them on 15 minutes before actually going into intercourse, you can allow the heavily mucosa area to really receive all of those cannabinoids. And that's going to help you relax your pelvic muscles, which will easily help you have more stronger orgasms. And the THC will also heighten your sensitivity, so using it on the clitoris can be amazing. The CBD can also be incredibly anti-inflammatory for anyone that deals with like endometriosis or chronic pain. And I find that CBD is also really good for people, for rape survivors that might have pain associated trauma, which is also very heavily prominent as well. But yeah, we can also use it as a topical on your skin. So if you wanted to give like a nice intimate body massage, that could really help a person feel more in their body and get them into that erotic headspace before going into play.
So I know that some of these applications can be therapeutic in the sense that you will get some bodily effects like pain relief and so on. But then there's also the matter of getting high. Right. So some of these products have the capacity to get you high. And it's my understanding that some of them won't or don't. And it's even been my experience with the THC lube that it's not essentially that strong of a high, so to speak, even if you use it, for example, anally, where the mucosa is much stronger and like it will absorb it much better than other parts, especially if you're a penis owner. So what's your stance on that, and how do you navigate these sorts of questions? Because I know you said earlier that it depends on your needs. Say somebody comes to you and says, I don't want to get high. What products would you recommend that just have, for example, pain relief or some of the other topical applications or body relaxation that's not necessarily a high?
Yeah, we get that question a lot. A lot of newcomers who want to use cannabis into the bedroom are actually looking for non-psychoactive cannabis products. And I think those are great options, which is why we created a CBD-only line, because we knew that there was going to be a huge demographic of people that were wanting these type of products. I think that there's a time and place for CBD products and THC products. I love using CBD products if I'm, you know, knowing that I have to drive that day, because having THC in the bloodstream while you're driving could be a huge issue, especially if you get pulled over and tested. Another thing is, like, if you have a THC lube, but, you know, someone gives you oral, that person can then ingest the THC lube and then fail a drug testing, right? So those kind of conversations are incredibly important, and it's why we should have warning labels on these type of cannabis products. But CBD is non-psychoactive, so that's the amazing part, is that we do have cannabinoid-based cannabis products that still have non-psychoactive effects, which is great. So that means that you won't feel any high. It doesn't matter how it's ingested. If it's smoked, if it's eaten, if it's applied topically, you will not feel high. If it is a THC product and it is smoked, you will definitely feel high. If you have a THC product and you eat it, you will definitely feel high. But if you get a THC product as a topical and you want to use it on maybe as like a lube to put it topically on your genitals or on your body, what's really cool about topicals is that they have a localized effect. So the cannabis doesn't actually travel farther. So you only really feel that effect wherever it's applied, which is incredibly crucial when we use THC lubes, which is incredible. So when we use that on the vulva, it can really help that area become so sensitive that, you know, orgasming and squirting is so much more easier for women. Or if you have a very tense neck, or a body ache, you can put it there and you can feel that effect of that THC working, but you will not feel high, which is great. So those are some things to think about in terms of non-psychoactive and psychoactive products in the bedroom.
So then if somebody does come to you and says, I do want to get high, but I don't want to smoke, what would you recommend for them? I know that some people have started drinking the lubes, and that's probably not a good idea, because from what I heard, it can get you super high in a not so good sense. So, yeah.
Never eat cannabis lube. Just never eat cannabis lube. It always goes so bad because the dosaging is so different from edibles.
Yeah.
And they're usually on the higher terms because you would use less lube than you would an edible, right? So, if someone did want to get high, but they didn't want to smoke it, edibles are your best friend. Edibles are great. If you don't want to actually use the calories of the edible, or you don't want it to take 45 minutes to an hour and a half to digest, you can also use a sublingual spray. A sublingual spray is so good at spraying it in your mouth. It's kind of like it looks like a fresh mint spray, and you'll feel that within a few minutes, which is pretty great.
Okay, so I'm curious personally just about the effects of the sublingual spray, because that would sound, for example, in my case, the most appealing. Somebody who is really, really bad at weed. Like,
great is that these sublingual sprays usually have dosaging on them as well. So maybe one spray is 2.5 milligrams or one spray is 5 milligrams. So you can really dose what works for you. And right. If it's a spray, you're not actually touching it. So it's also safe to spray on your genitals as well.
So in my experience, I've tried a few things, a few cannabis products, but when it comes to smoking, I am such a lightweight. I will have one puff and then it just gets me really, really hard. I'll start getting giddy and then hungry and horny and sleepy, and it all happens really, really fast. And then I end up overeating and passing out and hating myself the next day. So, I mean, I've had instances where I've smoked some organic weed. I don't know, they call it bush weed or cess. And it was lovely. I had none of those side effects that I really hate. I just had a really nice, pleasant sort of like psychedelic high, and it helped me be creative and think about certain ideas in that psychedelic sense of seeing patterns and like enjoying the thought process itself. So are there any products that you have that could have that sort of effect for lightweights that could be a little bit more measurable, like for example the sublingual spray I'm assuming would be your go-to?
1000%. And this is what I would love to say, because I get so many people telling me like, you always talk about cannabis and sex and we had to try it. So we tried it. We had edibles. We smoked a joint and oh my God, we just ate everything in the fridge and we passed out on each other.
Yep.
And I was like, that's why you need to come to one of our classes 100% because you got to learn a little bit more.
I like the segue.
Right?
Yes.
Because our classes are so informative. I love how because I'm a geek about cannabis. I've been in this industry for 8 years. So I've learned so much. And I just have so, and I love that our students leave, you know, with so much valuable information. But we also talk about the endocannabinoid system. And this is true for all of the new people or new to cannabis or even, you know, cannabis connoisseurs. The endocannabinoid system is actually how we consume cannabis. And you know what's cool is that we have the central nervous system, we have our respiratory system, our muscular system, and they all look the same, right? Yours looks just like mine. They're all, they may be like, you know, a little different, maybe bigger or smaller, but they all have the same anatomy. When we're talking about our endocannabinoid system, they are so unique. It's like a fingerprint. So my endocannabinoid system that processes all of my weed and your endocannabinoid system that processes all of your weed are completely different, which is why if we both ate the same cannabis edible, I had one, you had the other half, we're still going to have very different effects. And why is that? It's just because our endocannabinoid makeup is so incredibly varied, right? So there's just so many different ways how we consume cannabis. So that's why you have some friends who are like, oh, I just had one puff and I got so baked. And then you have some friends that'll be like, yeah, this is like my 10th edible. I don't feel anything. Right. So it really depends on what your endocannabinoid system is like. So how do you figure that out? What I like to give people.
Trial and error.
Huh?
That's the trial and error.
Trial and error, 1000%. But how do you make trial and error even like more fun? Get a journal with it. Get a cannabis journal. And, you know, every time you want to use a cannabis product, write down the strain name. So let's say we're going to eat an edible. It's been made with lemon haze, right? So I'll write lemon haze and we write that it's an edible. So we actually ate it, right? I'll put down what time we ate it at. We'll eat it. You know, hours go by. Enjoy it. The next day you'll look at your journal and you're like, what did I have yesterday? Oh, that edible. It was amazing. It was so good, right? So you'll know that that lemon haze strain that you had and that dosage works for you. That edible that you got so baked off had, you know, 40 milligrams in the edible. Stick to that type of, you know, dosage if that's what you're looking for. So it kind of tells you where it is, because I know people who get way too baked off of 20 milligrams and people who don't get baked off of 200 milligrams. So it really does vary. And what I would like to say is, as a rule of thumb, Health Canada has capped our edibles at being 10 milligrams per edible, which is very low. It's like a microdose. So I think this is a great place for people to start having one or two of those to see where their dosage is at. And this really just helps people understand, you know, what their metabolism is and what strains work for them, because some strains won't work well for you. Some strains are going to make you creative. Some strains are going to make you eat everything in your fridge. Some strains are going to make you feel really horny. So find those types of feelings and create, you know, this nice little catalog of weed strains that give you what you're looking for. So when you actually know what you want to do and you want to bring weed into play, you know exactly what you're looking for. And this has been incredibly helpful with me, because I used to do this with patients. So I understand that, you know, we would use Cinderella 99 with alcoholics because alcoholics found such good relief from that strain. So we've been using it for so many generations. I found out with my strain journal that for some reason, white genetics like White Widow or White Castle would just give me the biggest migraines, like the biggest headaches. And it just never made me feel great. And so I just really stay away from those type of strains. So no one's really going to know but you, unfortunately, but it makes it fun in the beginning to really test everything out, but start small and go slow, because we want, like, as long as we're safe, it's fun. It's never fun when it's not safe.
So is this what you offer in your classes generally? Is this kind of education?
Yeah, we do one-on-one classes. We like to partner with different sex stores. So like we do one-on-one classes like for the Good for Her or the Nookie Shop or like Seductions. And we get to teach people how to incorporate cannabis into the bedroom.
And have you taught workshops anywhere else?
We've taught workshops all over the world, pretty much. We travel a lot. We actually have a huge following in the U.S. And I used to work with a lot of different American cannabis companies. So we're very well known there, but we're still willing to work with more people and hopefully create an online course someday. Yeah.
So then let me ask you about the third thing that you mentioned, which was the podcast that you run. Tell me a little bit about the podcast.
I love the podcast. The podcast is, I really wish I started it earlier. We've been around for, you know, over 5 years now. And the thing is that as soon as I found out that cannabis can be a natural alternative for so many different sexual health ailments, I just wanted to scream at the top of my lungs and tell everyone, being like, you can try cannabis. That's what I want to tell everyone, right? If like, if you have endo, if you have fibroids, if you have, you know, pain during intercourse, if you're a vape survivor, there are other things for you. And I think that's so incredibly important. And it was really hard for me to get my message out there because the stigma around cannabis, nobody wanted to talk about the devil's lettuce 5 years ago, right? We weren't even legalized, right? So yeah. I got a lot of slack for many years. And it was very disheartening. And then, you know, legalization happened. And I was like, legalization happened, but we still can't, you know, say the word cannabis. So like, it was just so hard to advertise and like get the word out there. So it was really organic and through word of mouth. But ever since the podcast, I created a casting call, which is still open today if you'd like to join. And people can share with me their cannabis and sexual health stories on different ailments. And we go through them and we pick those submissions and we feature these amazing women on our show to talk about how they have used cannabis in their sexual health. And this has been incredibly eye-opening, even to me as the owner of the company, because now we're having women that are using it for things I never even thought about, like fibroids. That was one of the coolest episodes that I recorded, where this woman who had an 11-pound fibroid, there was an 11-pound tumor in her uterus. It's bigger than a baby. The average baby's 8 pounds. It was 11 pounds. And she had no idea that it was even a tumor. She just thought she was like big boned. And she, you know, was super scared after finding out she had a tumor. And she goes through the story about going through all of these doctors and all of these testing. And she just took her health into her own hands, started using Rick Simpson oil, and cured it herself, which is insane. I live for those stories. I absolutely live for those stories because I've seen them with my own eyes working with patients. And I just want to get the word out there as much as possible. But, you know, without actually creating claims to it, because I don't want to go to jail. But, you know, we can share these stories because they happen to us. And that's really the power in sharing stories at Pleasure Peaks that has been a part of us ever since the beginning, is really just a compassionate community of women trying to heal together.
So Pleasure Peaks, is that also the name of the podcast?
It's Pleasure Talks. So we kind of have a cool, fun wordplay where our podcast is Pleasure Talks, our retreats are Pleasure Island, and our products are Pleasure Products. So yeah, but we're pleasurepeaks.com.
Well, I like that you mentioned several times that, you know, you don't want to make medicinal claims. I think that's responsible of you, but you do like to have these stories from people because it could potentially be helpful to others dealing with similar issues as a supplemental route to take, you know, if, for example, CBD or THC ends up helping them in some way in whatever health or sexual health issues that they're dealing with, along with the existing medicine.
Most definitely. Like, research is so incredibly important. I can't stress this enough, which is why Pleasure Peaks has been incredibly involved with cannabis research ever since the get-go. We actually have our own in-house pleasure labs where we have an amazing community of women that can test our products, and we can basically pull in a lot of data on what their thoughts are on sexuality, pleasure, and cannabis and pain mitigation. And it really just helps us have our own internal research facility. So there's, I can't stress that enough, because it's not that I don't want to create these medical claims, because trust me, I do. It's just that I can't, legally I can't. I know what I've seen with my own eyes, and, you know, these women can vouch for them themselves. So I just wanted to give them a platform that people can share. So that's really what it comes down to at Pleasure Peaks and our Pleasure Talks podcast. But we also feature doctors. We have many doctors that we've been working with for the past 5 years, including the Endometriosis Foundation of America, the Endometriosis Society of Canada, and the OBGYN circles as well. So we've been working really closely with doctors, and we also feature them on our Pleasure Talks podcast to talk even deeper on cannabis, which is great. So we do have that factual information, because I think that's also key. Even though I do come from a natural healthcare perspective, I see the value and the need for traditional medicine. And to be honest, I think that's really what the goal is for Pleasure Peaks. We're only 5 years in, hopefully 10 years in, we can have like a pharmaceutical product. I've already gone through that route in starting a pharmaceutical company in cannabis. It's incredibly stressful. It's so hard. but I know when the time is right and we have the perfect partner, it will go through, because women's sexual health is the least studied area in the body. It's also the least funded area in the body. But that market is growing by the billions every single year, which is really interesting, because women's sexual health ailments are on the rise. There's a lot more that I can talk about that in terms of like what's on the market today, when in terms of like feminine hygiene products like tampons and pads and like douches with all this really harsh chemicals and parabens and fragrances and perfumes. It's just so incredibly unhealthy for the vaginal flora. And I think that we need to do our due diligence and go back to our roots, so much so in the sexual health space.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a good place to start challenging the big corporations that have monopolized these sorts of products, and sometimes irresponsibly, right? So you mentioned earlier something funny when you said the devil's lettuce. I was reminded that I have a little something here that I picked up in Denmark, in Copenhagen. If you know the Christiania area, it's full of old hippies, and it's the only place where they sell weed in a legal gray zone there. But I picked up this old propaganda poster, and I think you'd like it. I don't know if you can see it fully there.
It's so cool. Weed with the roots now. Weird orgies, wild parties, and these passions. That's so cool. So it's really interesting how you see that the marijuana is with an H.
Yeah. And
the reason why they put it, used an H, is because they actually wanted to make the word cannabis and marijuana sound more Mexican. Yeah. This was a huge part of the war on drugs and a huge war on racism, really. And which is why people of color have been disproportionately marginalized in this industry. That has to change, because it's just absolutely ridiculous. All over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they certainly did do those things. And marijuana, in fact, is probably one of those terms that needs to be extinguished because of its racist undertones. This was funny, yeah, that it wasn't spelled with a J either. It was marijuana with an H. And there's syringes in here. It shows somebody giving somebody a shot with a syringe, as though weed was somehow
injected.
Yeah, injectable. And anyhow, with the legal status of weed, it has obviously a very long and ugly history. I just finished reading Mass Incarceration, or The New Jim Crow, right? Mm-hmm. Mass Incarceration by Michelle Alexander, just talking about the war on drugs and how detrimental it's been. And I know that there's been some strong activism, even here locally in Toronto, to basically release all the people that have been imprisoned on weed charges now that it's legal, because the government's able to now make millions, if not billions of dollars off of cannabis sales, doing the exact same things that street dealers were doing, you know, a year before legalization, and then charged with weed charges, and they're still in prison today, despite the new legal status of the product.
Yeah, Cannabis Amnesty does a great job on that. I think anybody who's been in jail for nonviolent cannabis crimes should definitely be expunged and let free. It's pretty disgusting that that's apparent, and that's a reality of our world in the US and in Canada. I hope that that could push forward. I actually own another company called Acapulco Gold, which is a cannabis jewelry company. And 5% of our proceeds actually go to a cannabis amnesty. I think it's a great mission to work alongside, because it's so incredibly important.
So then that brings me to my next question, since mm-hmm. we got into this sort of territory, is I wonder how the resurgence now of Black Lives Matter movement has affected your work, if at all.
Yeah, I think how the Black Lives movement has affected my work was the first week or the first 2 weeks that George Floyd passed away. It was absolutely heart-wrenching. It was really hard to get any work done. It was really traumatizing to be in. The thing is, when George Floyd passed away on broad daylight in North America, in a place that I work and I'm constantly in, killed in broad daylight is just absolutely traumatizing. But to be honest, I've seen it so many times that I've almost become numb to it. Oh, it's almost like it doesn't surprise me at all. And that's very disgusting to sit with, as these people are my brothers and sisters. These people literally look exactly like me, and I'm no different. It's just really time and place. And I think that is the Black Lives Matter movement was very, very hard for myself and my team, considering majority of my staffing are people of color as well. And it was really, really, really hard. What has it made us do? It's just made us work harder, you know, turning our pain into more passion. How can we help more people of color get new opportunities into the industry? I also own the Green Rush Consulting Group, which basically helps people through a 6-week program to start their own cannabis business. So I've been helping people of color do that through that. And we've created scholarships for them. But it's so hard. It's so hard being a person of color in the world today. It's been incredibly shaken. I know Regis happened even closer. An old Black woman in Toronto, I believe, was killed by the police, unfortunately, was even closer because I actually knew the person that was affected by it. So these things come really, really close to home. How has it affected me? It's made me really call out my colleagues in my industry to do better, because I feel that not that my industry needs to do better, but that the world needs to do better, and we all need to do our part wherever we can, wherever we are. You know, I don't think that anybody can really do this alone. I think that it really it comes down to us collectively working together. It's been a great opportunity to have really tough conversations. Because of the Black Lives Matter movement, I've seen so many people post on social media, you know, trying to support or be an ally. And I've actually just spilled tea, being like, this is actual bullshit, because like, I know that you want to be an ally, but all of your actions make no sense with what you're saying. And I've been able to have really good conversations like that as well, and get some reprimands done. But it is very traumatizing for that to happen. And it's very interesting on how like shook to my core and my team was for those 2 weeks. It's definitely put us into a break period, but just makes us stronger at the end of the day, because we're so resilient and we're still here. And the fact that we are a cannabis company run by people of color, owned by people of color, that are this successful, it really makes me feel very happy that I am leading by example and showing them that they can do it too, which is incredibly important. So that's what I like to do.
Wow. So thank you for getting into that. I didn't mean to sort of provoke areas of that might be traumatizing or pick at that. Generally, I've asked this question of the last several people that I've interviewed, because I've extended my platform to BIPOC voices. So I've spoken to Black sex educators and sex bloggers, and we've been having these sorts of conversations, but I also like to maintain a sort of careful awareness that it's not my place to really just poke at these questions. So I'm glad you we're able to talk about these things, because generally when I ask that, I just mean, you know, how has the work itself been impacted by the movement? And what I was expecting a sort of answer around, you know, maybe sales, or if more people have come to your business because it is a Black-owned business, and that's what part of the activism is asking folks to do, to support Black-owned businesses and that sort of thing. And you went into the, you know, the more personal and heartfelt answer. So I'm thankful that you did. And I also do want to know if people have been coming to your business more now because of this activism. Have you seen, you know, people coming in a little bit more? I'm not sure if you sell any other weed products aside from the topicals and the sprays, like if you sell actual grams.
Yeah, we sell yoni eggs, we sell pipes and other things too that aren't cannabis online. We've definitely been getting a huge influx of sales and traffic and collaboration projects, 1,000%. I think that, actually, now that I think about it, I am the only Black cannabis sexual health kind of company that I know. Everybody that I work with on, because I speak at every cannabis conference, and I'm always the only Black person on these cannabis and sex panels. So I very much have felt a lot of support from people constantly, because I think there's a million posts right now being like, add your business, you know, Black owned businesses. And we're always one of the first ones in terms of cannabis, which is great. And I'm super thankful for, but I was expecting that. And that's amazing that that's finally happening. I think that we do need an influx of cash into our demographic, 1,000%, to really rebuild. And that does help with the reprimands, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, good. I hope that this platform also helps to spread a little bit more business your way. I mean, I literally just had somebody message me last week in a group chat, and she was looking for basically THC and CBD lube and was asking for suggestions. So now I know who to suggest.
Yeah. Our unfortunately, our cannabis products are available in the US only. They will be coming to Canada shortly, but are there actually, I know I'm Canadian, I'm based in Canada, but our products are in the US. But just because of manufacturing opportunities in the US versus Canada, there's so much more. We do have manufacturers here in Canada. It's just taking a lot more time in terms of compliance, because how Canada has really legalized weed is like legalizing nuclear waste. Like, even the word pleasure is non-compliant. So we have to do a complete rebrand here in Canada, which is going to be interesting.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to just call it my name. That's what I'm going to do. It's going to be interesting.
Do you have a prospect for when your products might be able to enter our side of things?
Not right now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But well, hopefully soon.
With COVID and everything, it's probably making it that much harder.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Well, that's one of the other things I've been asking recently, is how COVID has impacted your work.
Oh, so much. Majority of my work is actually being with my community, having events, speaking at conferences, planning retreats, and now I can't go anywhere. So it's been really, really tough for me to stick in one place. I'm always on like 2 to 3 flights a month, to be honest. Wow. It's insane. But now I'm in Toronto. So how has it changed? It's made me create a lot more online content. It's so crazy how much I'm in front of my laptop. I've been teaching so many classes online. I've spoken at a few online conferences. So everything is just really transferred online. Nothing has really changed much, but new offers are coming out soon. And I kind of like it, to be honest. It could be as close or not as I like. So I kind of really like that power, but I do miss my community, I won't lie.
Yeah, I feel you. I've been having to do this online as well. So then the last thing I will ask you is another little traditional thing that I do here on the podcast, is if you have a sexy, fun, wild, or outrageous story that you'd like to share.
Yeah, of course. Who doesn't have one, right? It's a good question.
And it's a matter of wanting to share it as well.
That's true, right? That's half of it. Yeah, I love sharing this type of stuff. I think the one that comes to mind always is me and this guy. It's so bad, I can't remember his name. me and this guy.
Let's just call him Massimo.
Yeah, exactly, right? I wish he was masturbating. Me and this guy named Massimo had the most cool sexual relationship. We were never dating. We just really loved having great sex. And he was really one of the first people that really opened me up. He was one of my first partners in the polyamory space, I guess, and really opened me up into just really enjoying my pleasure and just, you know, going for the ride. And I remember the first time we had sex, he was just like, oh, have you ever tried the Hitachi wand? And I'm like, what's Hitachi wand? And he was just like, oh, you're going to love this. And he's like, all right, get on all fours. And I was like, okay. So I get on all fours on the bed and he folds a towel and he puts it between my legs. And he starts using it on me and I'm like, oh my God, this thing's amazing, right? I'm clearly having the most fun ever. If you haven't had a Hitachi one, please try it once in your lifetime. And he was using it on me and he was just like, can you squirt? And I was just like, nope, I've never done it. And he was just like, oh, okay, so we won't need the towel. So he takes the towel off, you know, and he spreads my legs even farther apart. And he starts using it on me. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, stop. Something's happening, right? And I ended up squirting all over his bed, just like soaked, absolutely so much water. I remember it was amazing. And I was just like, what the heck just happened? He's just like, you lied to me. He's like, you said you couldn't squirt. And I was just like, I never knew I could. And he's like, damn it, you lied. And he's just like, he's like, don't worry, lie down. You're going to need a glass of water. If you don't have a glass of water, your head's going to hurt within 15 minutes. And I was like, okay. So he gets me a glass of water and he was just like, baby, squirted. Like, you didn't know you can do that. And we talked about it and I had a great time. And then I got obsessed with squirting. I squirted every single time I had sex after that. I was just like, I can't believe I haven't enjoyed this for so long. And this partner was actually with me around the time I was starting this company. So I was actually testing different weed lubes. And I was like, hey, like, let's test this weed lube. And he was just like, okay, cool. Like, come by after work. And this person, like, also worked in a hospital. So he's just like, he brought home some stuff from the hospital. I don't remember what it was. It was some weird spray. He's just like, here, we should mix this with your lube. And I was like, why? What is this weird, like, pharmaceutical container? And he was just like, no, it just helps us absorb things easier. Oh my goodness. So we used this with the lube and, you know, I've already tested the lube and I think it was like really good. I felt like some kind of kick and feel and I felt like fun, but then I used it with this thing and then I put it directly onto my vulva and honestly, within like 2 minutes of having intercourse, I was like, I need to sit down right now. He's just like, why? What's wrong? And I was like, I don't know how to explain it, but like my pussy is like super high right now. I was like, I don't know how to explain it, but like my pussy is fully greening out. Like I am high down there, like baked as fuck. And he was just like, how? Like, what does it feel like? And I was just like, I just feel like my pussy's like super drunk. Like I had to sit down on the floor. like my pussy was trying to get as close to the floor as possible. Like, you know, like when you're just like really wasted or really high. He was like, I just need to take a moment. My pussy needed to have a moment, basically. And when I did that, I was just like, oh my God, this is so weird. So it basically like put me into this thing where I really like to like smoke weed and meditate with crystals and my pussy and like with this weed lube and it came to all this crazy stuff. But anyways, me and Massimo had tons of fun, you know, testing these cannabis lubes for research and finding out I can squirt. Those are really fun experiences for me.
Oh my God, I love that story. That was really good. Oh, my pussy was high. That's going to be your tagline.
Pussy was so high. It was ridiculous.
Oh, man. Well, then before I let you go, this is your chance to plug away all the things where you want people to find you. Shout out everything.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. It's been so amazing to be here. This conversation has been great. If you guys have loved anything that we've talked about, please follow me You can go to either antoinettegomez.com or pleasurepeaks.com, and it has all of our social media handles, like on Instagram and Facebook, all there for you. On Instagram, I'm Antoinette G. Antoinette spelled a little differently. It's A-N-T-U-A-N-E-T-T-E. And Gomez with a Z. So if you find me on Antoinette G on Instagram or antoinettegomez.com or pleasurepeaks.com, you can listen to our podcast, come to our retreats, come to our virtual online classes. Or if you even want to start your own cannabis business, go to antoinettegomez.com and check out the Green Rush program.
All right. Antoinette, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. It's been lots of fun. Thanks so much for having me. You're listening to Intellectual Erection, a place where we talk about the naughty to stimulate your thinking.